Imagine a school day built around your child's needs and interests. It's possible with K-12. K-12 powered schools are accredited, tuition-free, online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. Students learn from state-certified teachers trained to teach online. And with the flexibility to learn wherever there's internet, it can fit into any family schedule. Join the more than 3 million families who've chosen K-12. You can make the switch at any time. Go to k12.com/podcast today to learn more.
Live on Air, presented by Ger Sweeney.
As we say at home, Dias Murdiev August Falcha. Nice to have your company. You're very welcome to another Live on Era. Monday evening on Talk Radio Europe, please do spread the word. If you'd like to get in contact with the programme at any stage, you can do so by email ger, at talkradioeurope.com. Simple as that. ger, at talkradioeurope.com. It would be lovely to hear from you. And I got a lovely message from Gran Canaria last week. I'll tell you about that shortly. On today's programme, we are going to get to the feature about the lads and University of Limerick and Dolores O'Riordan. We're going to the polls in Ireland for a referendum on Friday. I'll be talking to a member of the referendum commission outlining exactly what we're being asked to vote on. And I'll be on the streets talking to people about their opinions and how they're going to vote on Friday. I asked in the promos if you were listening, did you fancy a pint? Not a pint of you-know-what, but a pint of science. I'll be talking to a lady from Spain, actually, who's studying in Cork at the moment. She was one of the organisers of the Pint of Science event in Cork. More details to come shortly. Peter O'Dwyer will be joining us as well. And Peter is the senior business correspondent with the Times Ireland edition. And we'll be talking about the Irish perspective on Brexit and where it's been over the last week or thereabouts. Time for a little bit of music to settle us all down. We put the kettle on usually during the first song, we have the cup of tea as we go. And you believe that, don't you? Absolutely. Here's a man that's going to be celebrating his birthday on Wednesday of this week. I'll tell you shortly about some other famous Irish people celebrating birthdays this week, but I wanted to play a track from this man. His real name is Barry Moore. We know him as Luca Bloom. Here's a great song. It's called Sunny Sailor Boy.
Moi. On a day of days, I stood and gazed over the western sea. Startled and struck and frightened to look when a mermaid called to me. Ooh-ah-ooh-ah-ooh, ooh, 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 ooh. My sunny sailor boy. Like a man in a dream, for an aged scene, I stood as still as a stone, while the mermaid sang and her melody rang like a memory calling me home. Wow, 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 my sunny sailor boy. Then the sea and the wind and the shores did spin, though my resistance was strong. All the stars in space filled the mermaid's face. She captured my will with her song. Ooh-ah-ooh-ah-ooh, ooh-ah-ooh-ah-ooh, my sunny sailor boy. Ooh, ah, ooh, ah, ooh, my sunny sailor boy. Somehow I spoke, the enchantment broke. I rubbed my eyes open wide. Like a dream she was gone, what remained was a song, born on the ebbing tide. Sunny sailor boy. My sunny sailor boy.
title track from Luca Bloom, Sunny Sailor Boy is what it's called. And speaking of birthdays, because I mentioned at the start that there are some famous birthdays this week, including Luca's. Well, today, for instance, Mary Robinson, our former president. She was born in Mayo 74 years ago, 1944. The year before that, Michael Noonan, if you're from the Limerick area, you will know. In fact, anybody from Ireland will know who Michael Noonan is, because he was Minister for Finance on a number of occasions, most recently up to about 2 years ago. He was born in Limerick on this day, 1943. Eamon Cregan, great Limerick hurler, he was born in 1945. Eamon Cregan, 73 years old today. James Plunkett, the playwright, was born in Dublin in 1920 on this day, and the founder and creator of Radio Caroline from the 1960s up as far as the 1980s. Ronan O'Rahilly, he was born in Dublin on this day in 1940. 78 years old is Ronan O'Rahilly. Tomorrow then, Mary Black, she celebrates her birthday. She was born in 1955, so we say happy 63rd birthday to her. The very same age as the man we've just heard, Luca Bloom, born in Newbridge in County Kildare. Paddy Bonner, the great Irish goalkeeper, remembered for so many things, but specifically for the penalty save in the 1990 World Cup knockout stages against Romania from Burtonport in County Donegal. We wish him a happy 58th birthday for Thursday. And on Friday, the actor Cillian Murphy was born in Douglas in Cork in 1976. So we say happy 42nd birthday to Cillian Murphy. I'm sure he will be delighted if he happens to be listening to TRE on this Monday evening. Now, before we do anything else, I need to tell you about something that you might be interested in. And if you're not, somebody that you know might be interested in. It's from the embassy, the Irish embassy in Madrid. And you will know that we spoke with the ambassador, Sheila Maguire, on the first programme here on TRE. Well, the Embassy of Ireland in Madrid is currently recruiting for a full-time temporary post of consular assistant commencing this month. This summer position will last for a period of 4 months only and carries no entitlements to civil servant status. If you're interested, you need to have the following things. There's a lot of criteria here, but you definitely need to have this. You need to have bilingual English and Spanish, excellent written and oral communication skills in both languages required, experience of involvement in a customer service orientated team, ability to show compassion and understanding when dealing with Irish citizens in distress, and a familiarity with the Spanish and Irish culture and administration, including legal and healthcare systems. The deadline for this is tomorrow evening. Yeah, midnight tomorrow evening. So you need to get in there quickly. All right, the 22nd, midnight on the 22nd, which is tomorrow. And if you would like to have a look at the other criteria and how you apply, will you go on to irlanda.es. Irlanda.es, and that will give you all of the information. And thank you to the embassy for passing the information to us so that we could give it to you. Let's do a very quick break and then we will get to the UL package.
Live on Era, presented by Ger Sweeney. Live on Era, presented by Ger Sweeney.
Welcome back to the programme. Now, just over a week ago, I saw an article on the Limerick Leader newspaper written by Jessica Casey about five Spanish students who had met while studying at the University of Limerick 20 years ago. I contacted Jess and she very kindly put me in touch with the university and subsequently the lads themselves. Now, according to Lena Kosoliva, the University of Limerick considers the Erasmus programme crucially important to the personal and professional development of their students and their staff. Last month, the University of Limerick received the Best Erasmus Programme Award by the Education Awards Ireland. Speaking to Lena, who couldn't join us on air today, she told me that the award serves as the best proof of the hard work, the exceptional support and dedication of UL administrative and academic staff. And we wish them congratulations on that. They've been running the Erasmus programme at the university for many years now. Now, the incoming students constitute an important integral part of UL's community and enrich the diversity of the work undertaken there. They are always delighted to have international students on campus and look forward to learning with them, making their experience of studying at the University of Limerick an unforgettable life experience. Now, in relation to the former Erasmus students from Spain, the university was absolutely thrilled to have them back in Ireland, in Limerick, in fact, after 20 years. So to find out what it was all about, I spoke to one of those former students, Juan Luis Robles Gomez, about the time in Limerick and the reunion that took place. And I started by asking him if his trip to Limerick back in 1998 was the first time he'd been to Ireland.
Yes, it was indeed. What I did was called an Erasmus exchange. As you know, it's funded by the European Union. And first thing I will have to say that we considered that it's an excellent idea to develop exchange program with Erasmus with foreign students. Well, September 98, I didn't have a clue of Hogwarts Island. I knew things about the Shamrock, the Leprechaun, the Cliffs of Moher, some things about Dublin, about, I didn't know Limerick. I mean, the first reason why did I choose Limerick, I could choose between Limerick and Tralee. And Limerick, it sounded nicer than Tralee. That was the first option I had to say, I like Limerick. Okay. It sounds nice.
And when you got here, did you actually visit Tralee?
I did after a while. After a year and a half, living there. I think the Tralee it's a capital of Kerry, as far as I know. It's a very small town, as far as I know.
Yeah.
But I prefer the crack, as you Irish people say. I would prefer the crack in Limerick rather than Tralee, as far as I know.
And where were you living in Spain at that time? Where did you grow up?
I was living in my hometown. My home city is called León, L-E-O-N. It's a small city northwest of Spain.
Okay. Before you came for the Erasmus year, what were you studying?
I was doing a degree in business studies, and that was the main reason to improve my poor English level was to go to a English speaker foreign country.
And the main reason we're talking to you is about the article that I mentioned just a few moments ago, where you and four other friends who met back in 1998 when you were all on the Erasmus year, and it was 20 years since you had got together originally in Limerick. So tell us a little bit about who came to visit UL with you in your most recent trip, and maybe what part of Spain they're living in.
The first guy I met from this group is called Oscar. He's not naming this group. Oscar is living currently at the Czech. No, he's living in UK at the moment. I met him at the Barajas airport on the bus. I didn't know anyone at the bus, and it was a couple talking to me, and they asked me, "Where are you going into Ireland?" I said, "I'm going to Limerick." And the guy came to me, did you say that you are going to Limerick? I said, that's right. Yeah. And he said, we could do the trip together. Then we did the trip together from Dublin to Limerick. And he was he was the Spanish lecturer for the University of Limerick.
Okay,
the rest of the guys' names, first of all, Ricardo, Pedro, Paco, and Sergio, they are the four guys that we made this trip together. But let's go back to 1998, okay?
Great.
As I said, I didn't know anyone at all. We went to Limerick, it was the mid-September 1998. And after 3-4 days, the University of Limerick, I have to say that it is a very well-organized university. They gather most of the Erasmus together, and we start meeting some people. Ricardo, he's from Alicante.
Mm-hmm.
Pedro, he's from Barcelona. Paco, he's from Granada. And Sergio, he's from Madrid. I didn't know any one of them before. Then we met up together in September 1998 at the University of Limerick. And we started being friends, with many more Erasmus students from all over Europe.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the first time we met up all together. That was the time.
Now, you were quoted in the article that I mentioned saying that it was a Tuesday night and you were heading out because Tuesday night used to be a great night out for students in Limerick at the time. Is it still the case?
Do you know Limerick?
I do indeed. I was born and bred in Limerick.
Okay, then you know the place.
Yeah.
Okay, the famous pub called the Stables, around
the Stables,
in the university. That was the place where you used to gather, let's say on Thursday or Friday night, some of us will go to City Centre, the places like the Old Quarter, Nancy Blake's. As far as I know, Nancy Blake's is a very well-known pub for Spanish people. I don't know why, but it has a kind of nice atmosphere. And as I said, we will go out many nights per week. During the week, we will go out at the Stables on surrounding some pubs in Cossetroy.
Right.
Or during the weekend, Friday, Saturday night, some of us will go to the city centre.
You say that living with Irish people created great memories for you. You enjoyed the fun and the crack that you had with the people, the Irish people.
Absolutely. I have to say that the first place where I was living is called Kilmurdy Village. And I had five housemates. Four of them are two Irish guys, two Irish girls, and one girl from the States.
Right.
I even know that their names. They were very nice. I mean, I found it very hard to understand at the beginning, not because of the Irish accent, because I didn't have a clue of how to speak English.
Right.
Then I didn't even recognize the accent from Limerick. I know there is a remarkable accent from Limerick, but at the time, I didn't recognize any kind of accent. But people, even people from the house, they were very nice people. I mean, they were a little bit younger than me, but very nice.
And can you differentiate now between a Limerick accent, a Dublin accent, a Cork accent, a Galway accent?
If I have to be honest with you, no. Oh. I can recognize accent from Cork, accent from Kerry, an accent from the north of Ireland, because
yes.
When I was working at a US company based in Dublin 2000, there were many of my workmates were from Donegal and from Belfast, from Derry. The accent from people from the north is a very, very peculiar accent, and even accents from Kerry and from Cork.
Yeah.
Accent from Dublin. I spent there a year and a half. I would say it has a different accent, but I still don't recognize the accent from Limerick. It's true.
Okay.
If I have to be honest with you.
Again, going back to Jess's article, you said in that you were bonded, you and the other four guys, you were bonded by your love of Limerick. And was it the people of Limerick that you loved, or was it the atmosphere there? What was it about Limerick that just, you know, you all took to it?
People in Limerick in general are very nice. As I said before, the staff and students from the university, they were superb. And we, as I said, even myself, living afterwards in Dublin and Cork, I even found more comfortable myself living in Limerick, rather especially at comparing with Dublin, because Dublin is a kind of nightmare.
Now, you were bonded by your love of the Limerick people then and by the love of the university and the structures that's there. But especially,
exactly.
But especially, I'm told, by the music of the late Dolores O'Riordan and the Cranberries.
When we went to Ireland, we knew the Cranberries. We knew they were Irish, but we didn't know from where. We just read Limerick and they said, no, they are from Limerick. Okay. We didn't know many things from, as I said before, we didn't know many things from Limerick. We knew that Richard Harris, for example, he's from Limerick.
Richard, yes.
We knew at the time that the Cranberries were from Limerick. Even I saw the drummer on Henry Street. I remember that. Someone told me, look, that guy, he's the drummer from the Cranberries.
Yeah.
The name reason we came back 19 and a half years after we left the Erasmus scholarship. As you know, sadly, January 2018, Dolores O'Riordan passed away.
That's right.
And as we had a chat, we said, we have to go back now. We have to go back as far as we can. We have to go back to Limerick because we have to pay respect, not to the Cranberries.
That
we
was
have
nice.
To pay respect to the University of Limerick and to the Limerick people and to the Irish people. And they decided, we were eight guys, five of us, we could go back. And we decided to honor that time. And one of the guys, Sergio, he contacted the staff from the University of Limerick. He contacted with a lady, a girl called Ellie McNamara. And they were delighted to contact back with us and to offer us a really, really nice and warm reception. That was
That's the 30th of
April.
And it's nice that you had such wonderful memories of the university and the staff and the program. And then 20 years on, or 19 and a half years later, you got the very same warmth and welcoming and professionalism from the staff at the University of Limerick when you wanted to come back and you wanted to pay your respects to the city and people who would have loved and listened to Dolores and the Cranberries down through the years.
We shared the memories from many things. I mean, the Cranberries was one of the facts. The second fact was the atmosphere at the university, the atmosphere they see at the city, at Limerick City, and in general, the Irish atmosphere that Irish people always welcome foreign people like us. Like we were Erasmus students, and we felt like at home. Then, as I told you, as when this terrible tragedy happened in January, we said we had to go back this year. I mean, 20 years after we left the Erasmus scholarship. I mean, some of us still get living in Ireland for a while as myself. I spent a total of 4 years living in, first of all, Limerick. I did a postgrad in computers, and after moving to Dublin and finally to Cork. Mm-hmm. But let's say that we said we had to go back to the same city, Limerick. We didn't want to go back to, let's say, Galway to Dublin. No, but Castle Troy is one of the best places I have ever seen in my life. It's beautiful.
Juan, I do appreciate you taking the time to have a chat with us today on Talk Radio Europe. I'm glad that you enjoyed your trip back to the city of Limerick and indeed to UL.
Thanks very much. I have to say, I will say thank you to all the team for the University of Limerick, the International Education Divisional Office, especially to Ali McNamara. Thanks a lot for your time.
And so with that, I think it's appropriate that we take a listen to Dolores and the Cranberries.
Live on Era, presented by Jer Sweeney. Live on Era, presented by Ger Sweeney.
Welcome back to the programme. And if you are keeping up to date with events in Ireland, you will be aware that on the 25th of May this week, we are going to the polls in Ireland and we're being asked to vote on a referendum. And a number of years ago, to make sure that information got to the people in an unbiased way, a referendum commission was established. And they are the people that will give you information on what exactly you're being asked to vote on, and they won't sway you in any particular way. So I'm joined on the phone right now by Mark Brannock from the Referendum Commission in Ireland to talk to me a little bit about what we're being asked to vote on the 25th. Mark, thank you for taking the call.
You're very welcome.
And it's been a busy time for you, no doubt.
It certainly has. I mean, we're getting close to referendum day now on the 25th of May. But yeah, it's been a pretty long campaign and there's a huge amount of interest and a lot of strong feeling on both sides of it.
And it is fair to say that you just give information.
Exactly. I mean, our job is to produce an independent and neutral guide to the referendum. We don't argue for a yes vote or a no vote, but we try and lay out in as dispassionate a way as we can the facts of what you're voting on, what would happen if you voted yes, and what would happen if you voted no.
And do you know a little bit about the history of where we're at right now and why we're being asked to vote on the 25th?
Yes. I mean, the law in relation to termination of pregnancy in Ireland has evolved since, I suppose, a referendum in 1983, a referendum in 1992, legislation that was passed in 2013 called the Protection of Life During Pregnancy Act. So it has led to a position in Ireland where the current legal position is that it's lawful to have a termination of pregnancy here only when there's a real and substantial risk to the life of the mother, including a risk of suicide. And otherwise, it is a criminal offence to, and I think the phrase used is to intentionally destroy unborn human life. So you can have a termination if there's a real and substantial risk to the life of the mother, but otherwise you can't.
And the big thing is repeal of the 8th. That's what we're being asked to vote on. And can you explain to us what the 8th Amendment is?
Well, actually, it's the changing of Article 43.3. Just to explain, the 8th Amendment to the Constitution was the one passed in 1983, which said that the unborn had an equal right to life with the mother, and the state had to defend that right as far as was practical. Then that article was added to by the 13th and 14th Amendments, which aren't as heard of as much, but in 1992, there were referendums basically allowing for freedom to travel and allowing for freedom to obtain or make available information about services that are lawfully available in other states. And obviously that all relates to termination of pregnancy. So the proposal is to repeal not only the 8th, but the 13th and 14th. I know these numbers confuse people, but it's basically to change the provision in the Constitution to allow the Oireachtas make laws in future to allow for the termination of pregnancy in circumstances other than when there is a real and substantial risk to the life of a mother.
So what exactly are we going to be asked at the polling booth?
You're going to be asked basically whether or not to delete the present Article 43.3. That's the one which recognises the right to life of the unborn and says it is equal to the right of the mother, and also the one which talks about the freedom to travel and the freedom to get information. You'll be asked to replace all that with a single sentence saying that provision may be made by law for the regulation of termination of pregnancy. So you're effectively being asked to say that the Oireachtas can in future make laws to regulate the termination of pregnancy in broader circumstances than is currently the case.
And if this is passed, if the yes vote wins this, what is the next stage?
Yes, it's interesting. If the yes vote, firstly, the day after the yes vote, nothing changes, as in things would only change if the Oireachtas then pass laws regulating the termination of pregnancy. So if we vote yes, the Dáil and the Seanad can consider new laws and can pass new laws allowing for termination of pregnancy in broader circumstances than is available now.
But your role is finished really from the 25th, isn't it?
It is. I mean, there are various proposals put forward. The government, I think is widely known, has said, for example, that if there's a yes vote, they would like to bring in legislation allowing termination of pregnancy up to 12 weeks on a pretty unrestricted basis, and after that in certain cases. But it will be open to others to bring forward other laws, you know, and other proposals, so, and the Dáil and the Seanad would have to consider them. So we can't be certain what happens in terms of passing laws, and the Commission has no role in discussing that. All our role is explaining that on the 25th you are voting to allow the Dáil and the Seanad to consider and pass these laws.
All right. I do appreciate, Mark, you taking the time to talk to us and clearing that up.
Okay, thank you.
That was Mark Brannock from the Referendum Commission. So, how are the people of Ireland thinking? I went on the streets and asked people how they were going to vote, if they were going to vote, and what was making up their mind. This is what they told me.
Yes.
And have you decided which way you're going to vote?
Yes.
And which way are you leaning at the minute?
Yes.
Why are you voting yes?
I think the case of that lady in Galway, that was a scandal, and that had been waiting to happen in this country for years. If people want to have an abortion, why should they have to go and trouble the British health services when our own health services are here?
I will.
Have you decided which way you're going to go?
I haven't really. I'm nearly definite, but I'm still a little bit undecided because I think there's no winners with this one. Myself personally, I would be pro-life, but I'm also pro-choice, so I'm not sure then where to come down then. So.
And what do you think of the campaign so far?
I think it has taken a while to get going, which hasn't helped. I think one side of the campaign is much more active than the other side.
And where do you find the information you're looking for?
Through local press, through media.
And do you have conversations with your family and your friends about it?
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
Arguments?
Debates more than arguments, yeah.
Listen, thanks very much for your time. Firstly, what age are you?
18.
First time voting at the referendum?
Yeah.
Have you decided which way you're going to vote?
Mm-hmm.
Which?
No.
And why are you going to vote no?
It's kind of disturbing to kill your own children, isn't it?
Is that what you think it's about?
Yeah, that's what it's about.
What would you say to the argument that because you're a man, you will never have to make the choice to have an abortion or not have an abortion?
That's true, but at the same time, it's 6 months is a long time to decide. Well,
but what's the 6 months about? What's that?
6 months is the time that you're allowed to abort a baby.
No, 12 weeks. Would that make a difference to you? 12 weeks is the time. There is no legislation at present, but if yes wins and the legislation is enacted, it will mean that up to 12 weeks you can have abortion on demand after 12 weeks in certain circumstances. Would that make a difference to you?
No, I just think it's still not the right thing to do.
I'm 19.
And have you decided if you're going to vote in the referendum?
I have.
Is it your first time voting?
It is my first time voting.
And how do you feel about that? Is it something that you feel a responsibility towards?
It is.
Okay, and have you made up your mind as to which way you're going to vote?
I have. I'm voting yes.
And what has made you decide that you're going to vote yes?
I suppose it's just to give people the option to do what they want to do, so.
And did your decision come from media reports or newspaper reports?
I think it's just your own personal thing, because you kind of have your mind made up before you see all the posters and everything.
Do you talk about it among your friends and family?
We do.
Have you had arguments?
Yeah, I suppose. But it's just kind of interesting as well to hear all the different ideas of how it goes.
Can I ask you firstly, are you going to vote in the referendum?
I am, yeah.
Have you decided which way you're going
yes.
to vote?
No.
You're going to vote no, is it?
Yes, yes.
And tell me, why are you going to vote no, if you don't mind me asking?
Well, I don't know. I think it's fair. No, because... It's fair on the little children, I think.
And do you talk about it with your family or your friends?
No, I never mention it, no.
I won't be here, I'll be in New York.
If you were here, would you have an opinion one way or the other as to how you would vote?
Yes.
Would you? And why would you do that?
I just feel that people have the freedom of choice. And
I'm going to vote no. Because I believe that every child has the right to life, an unborn child. I don't feel that it's the grounds that they're saying that you're compassionate. Say a rape victim. They could have the baby. There is people in Ireland that can't have children and they would love a little baby boy or a little girl. So my opinion is no, and that's my heart.
Is it something you talk about with family and friends?
Yes, I would. And I wouldn't say to anyone, vote no. That's their opinion, but mine is, and because of how I feel. I have two grandchildren. She's not married. It wasn't a great relationship and she got pregnant a second time. And I wasn't very happy. But when you see my second little grandchild, no way. You couldn't do it. No way.
Still not sure, probably.
And why wouldn't you vote?
I think it's been a bit of a mess. It hasn't been organised very well. I think it should have been clearer, especially for the no voters. It should be clearer for them, and to have them on board, they'd need to know a little bit more, and it's been left vague. I wonder if it's been done deliberately, because it doesn't make any sense to me.
Firstly, can I ask you if you're going to vote on the 25th?
I will, yes.
Do you know which way you're going to vote?
I do. I leave it the way it is.
So you'll be voting no?
I will be voting no.
Is there a particular reason why you'll vote no?
I just don't think it's right.
And that decision, is that something that comes from your own heart, or is it something that you have listened to debates or yes. over the...
Yes, my own heart, yes.
I see that you're pushing a pram with a little baby in it.
Absolutely.
And so do you favour a yes or a no vote?
A yes vote.
And absolutely. Tell me, if you don't mind, why you want a yes vote?
Mainly for the case of the fetal abnormalities. I had a rocky moment myself with this, where we thought that there was a possibility that there could be one, and the thought that there would have been absolutely no option but to go from 12 weeks to 40 weeks carrying a baby that may not have survived is just horrific.
How long did it take for you to know that things would be all right?
3 weeks.
So that was an earth-shattering 3 weeks?
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, couldn't sleep at all, a wink, for 3 full weeks. Not.
And if at that time you had an option, would you have gone for the option?
If I knew for 100% absolute certain that there was no hope, I would have, because with the thing that he possibly had, he would have suffered beforehand, so yeah.
And he's hale and hearty?
Absolutely, 100%. 4 months.
So you're finally getting some sleep.
Yes, well, just about.
Was that your experience? Was that the reason that you have decided to go yes? Or would you have done that, do you think, in the past?
I would have always been pro-choice. I don't see why I should be able to tell someone else what they can do with their bodies, but that just made it more real.
I probably will.
If you do, have you decided whether you might vote yes or vote no?
No, I haven't decided. It's a very personal issue.
Where are you looking for answers?
I'm not listening to media much because they go on and on and on each side. More my family and inner self.
You are going to vote, and do you know which way?
I do indeed, yeah. It'll be negative, no. Big no.
Okay, a big no. Do you mind me asking why you've decided to vote no?
I would say because I greatly love and value my son. I've got a 7-year-old son. And also I'm proud to say I'm a practicing Roman Catholic.
Is there any room to look at the option for choice? If somebody is to vote yes in the referendum, they're giving a choice to somebody who can then make that same decision not to have an abortion or two. Is there any argument to be made for that in your book?
No, because it's basically opening the floodgates for a, you know, an avalanche of excuses, you know.
And one final question for you. In relation to the campaign itself, how do you think that's been run? Has it been a good campaign?
Well, it looks as though the government, the majority, even doctors seem to be of the opinion of yes, seems to be the, tragically, seems to be the general feeling out there, you know.
I see you've got a young lad of about, what, three?
Four.
Yeah. And you've got a little one here who's only a couple of weeks old.
Yeah.
So can I ask you, are you voting in the referendum?
I am indeed, yeah. I will, of course, definitely. I've never missed a vote since I was 18, so I will be voting yes.
As a father, why have you made that decision?
I think that it is a right for everybody to choose what they want to do, when they want to do it.
And your decision, has that been based on your life and your experience and those around you, or has the media influenced it, or the church influenced it, or has there been anything outside of that?
No, the church would influence me to go completely against them, to be honest, because I think that they're becoming embroiled in something that is political, that in the public should be deciding on it, and not being told by a male priest of all things to be told how we should vote. I think it's wrong.
Live on Air, presented by Ger Sweeney. Live on Air, presented by Ger Sweeney.
Right, it's that time of the day when we take a look at what's happening in the world of Brexit from an Irish perspective. And joining me on the phone again today is Peter O'Dwyer, the senior business correspondent with the Times Ireland edition. Peter, good evening and thank you for joining us.
Hi, Ger.
All good in the world of Brexit, I hope.
Absolutely. Never a dull day in the world of Brexit.
Never a dull day. I know that we're going to talk about the meeting that Mrs. May had with our Taoiseach, Leo Varadkar, in Bulgaria on Thursday. So what was that all about?
On the fringes of a meeting in Sofia last Thursday, Leo Varadkar and Theresa May sat down for a chat for about 30 minutes, where it's understood that the British Prime Minister outlined her latest thinking for a solution to this whole issue and the Irish backstop and the customs issue. She gave a little detail to the Taoiseach. He welcomed it in the most cautious of terms, but it was a welcome nonetheless. He described it as new thinking and said that he was not discouraged by it, which, as you know, welcomes for something go is pretty lukewarm, but it's probably as good as we've seen for quite a while. And she said that anything really that would bring the UK and the EU closer in terms of customs would be welcomed. So we don't really have the detail of it yet, but essentially it's understood that the UK would align with the rules of the customs union and the single market for a period post the transition deal, which stretches from 2019 when the UK leaves the EU to 2021. So it's kind of a one foot in, one foot out. We'd apply much of the rules of the customs union, the single market, even after the transition. I suppose you could unkindly describe it as kicking the can down the road, which it probably is. But while it's easy to sneer at that, it's probably not a bad call from Mrs. May either, in that she's buying herself some more time and buying the UK some more time to figure out what exactly would happen. It's probably a deal that nobody will be overly enthusiastic about, but it could well still garner enough support, a broad welcome, a lukewarm kind of welcome, as we saw from the Taoiseach, just because it's palatable for everybody, even if they don't love the idea.
And we know that the biggest difficulty that she has is at home, her own cabinet, her Conservative colleagues. I know we don't have the details, but within this latest, do we have any idea as to whether she's going to be able to sell that at home or not?
The feeling is that she has a slightly better chance of selling it than the customs partnership plan, which was floated until recently, which essentially would have seen the UK collect tariffs on behalf of the EU. The EU didn't like that because they didn't like leaving that up to a third country, as they'd be known. And even though this latest plan seems very similar to that customs plan, it is felt that she has a slightly better chance. It seems like David Davis, the Brexit secretary, is back on side, to use that term, whereas he was pretty dissatisfied there for a while. Mm-hmm. And even some of the hardline Brexiteers have kind of used language in the last few days that, you know, they could live with this plan, or it's acceptable even if they don't love it. So it seems like she might have just struck a compromise that, for the moment at least, gives her a better chance of selling it. That's not to say that it'll be an easy sell, but it does seem like she has a mildly better chance of selling it at home than she previously had.
And two questions just to finish with, Peter. Firstly, is there a danger with kicking the can down the road that everything else will be agreed and then suddenly we'll be back into square one where this will falter at the last hurdle?
Yeah, I suppose there's always a degree of risk with something like that. I mean, what there has been talk as well in the last week or 2 weeks, perhaps, that this backstop agreement that was agreed last December, essentially the wording of that was that if all else fails, i.e. technology won't do for the border and free trade won't do, that Northern Ireland would align with the rules of the customs union. Now, the issue is what the actual wording says. It's not Northern Ireland that's in the piece of paper. It's the UK will align. Now, that was just taken as read to mean that it would be Northern Ireland, because that's what the whole backstop was about.
Right.
But the UK seem to have revisited and are taking a very literal view to it and saying that really it says in black and white that the UK will align. And this is seen as an effort in Brussels. It's seen as an effort perhaps to technically leave the single market and the customs union, which would mean that the four freedoms wouldn't have to be applied, which is the big sticking point, them being capital, goods, services and people. So it's the cherry picking approach that technically the UK would leave. They would be free to strike their own trade deals, but that they would also continue to apply much of the rules. That's something that Brussels is very aware of and absolutely does not want. So while there is a risk, I suppose, that something would be kicked down the can, or the can would be kicked down the road, and that, as you say, you know, everything else could be agreed, I think Brussels and Dublin are very vigilant of that sort of any, I suppose, trickery, as they might see in the UK's part. So there's a risk, but I think they are well aware of it, and I think they'd be ready to do away with any proposal that might lead to that.
All right. And just very finally, is this, in your opinion, going to be a settlement that will be agreed by altering one word in one paragraph to get it over one hurdle, another word in another paragraph the next time round, so that it becomes more palatable more slowly to those that are against the agreement?
It's hard to know how exactly it will be finalised, but certainly you wouldn't be surprised. I mean, the December deal, when it was struck, was seen as a bit of a fudge in that you really couldn't deliver everything that was agreed, i.e. on the North or for Brussels, for Dublin. You couldn't keep everybody happy, the Brexiteers back in the UK. So really it was kind of an acceptance that this is a bit of a fudge. We'll kick the can down the road and we'll see what we can do. And as you say, bit by bit, there's kind of compromise on each side. You know, you get there in the end. So that probably is how it's going to be done in the end. But we're probably still a long way from that actually being agreed.
All right. Is there anything looming large on the horizon this week, this coming week, that we should be concerned about or thinking about?
Well, there's just talk that this plan that we've just been discussing, that Theresa May might give a little more detail. She's due to give detail, obviously, at some stage before June. And there's thought that that might come as early as this week. So inevitably, if there is, we'll have some reaction from all quarters. There'll be the Taoiseach will be out. Simon Coveney, the foreign minister in Ireland, will be out. And obviously, Brussels will say something about it. Not to mention the Brexiteers back at home, they'll have something to say. So if and when she comes out with that detail, there'll be a lot of reaction. We're not sure if it's going to be this week, but it may well be.
Okay. Peter O'Dwyer, Senior Business Correspondent or Reporter with the Times Ireland Edition. Thank you for joining us again today, and we look forward to your update next week.
Thanks, Chair.
Live on Era, presented by Ger Sweeney.
I read an article recently and it started with how do voters make decisions in referendums, and that was quite appropriate because Ireland is just about to go to the polls for a referendum. What are quantum computers? Can we tackle environmentally unfriendly cow burps by changing the animals' diets? And what medicines will we be using in the future? And these were just some of the subjects that were being discussed by a few people during an event that was called Pint of Science Ireland, where researchers spoke in local pubs about their work in an accessible way. One of the people that is organising the event in Cork is a lady by the name of Beatrice Gil Pulido. And Beatrice is Spanish and she joins me on the phone now. Beatrice, or B is your Irish name. Am I right?
Yeah, exactly. Hi, everyone. Yeah, my name is Beatriz, but I like to joke that my Irish name is B because everyone around UCC calls me really B. So yeah, I am B.
You're B. And tell me, where in Spain are you from?
That's a funny question, actually, because I have the feeling like I'm from everywhere in Spain because originally I was born in Cordoba, so I'm from Andalusia. Uh-huh. But I spent most of my childhood, in Melilla, that is one of these two Spanish cities in the north of Africa. However, when everyone or when someone asked me where I'm from, I always answer that I'm from Alcalá La Real. And Alcalá La Real is a small, well, it's a village belonging to Jaén. It's also in Andalusia. So I think just because I've been around different cities in Spain, I really feel like I'm from Alcalá La Real, where my family comes from, really.
Okay. Tell me about your time in Ireland. You're in Cork. You're studying in Cork. So can you tell us what you're studying?
Yeah, I'm currently doing my PhD in microbiology.
Okay.
And well, I'm kind of finishing, hopefully, and at the beginning of next year. And well, I moved to Ireland 4 years ago. Actually, the 1st of June is my 4th anniversary in this beautiful country.
Lovely.
And I moved here to improve my English because, well, I was kind of tired of looking for a job in Spain. So I just needed a big change and I thought, well, let's go to Ireland, try to improve my English and try to find a job. This is how I end up in Ireland, really.
Okay. And when you're finished then in university, what's your plan? Is it to stay in Ireland or is it to come back to Spain?
Well, I think I will stay in Ireland. The options are to stay here or to move to the Netherlands because I plan to move to the industry. I would like to make that change. But I don't think, well, Spain is not in between. Between the options, actually.
Okay. What do you like most about the country?
Well, this is difficult to pick just a couple of things, actually,
right.
Because, well, I didn't even plan to come to Ireland. It was actually a little bit by a chance because I was considering both UK and Ireland. But when I came here, I remember that two of the things I liked the most were the people.
Mm-hmm.
People are really friendly, really helpful. So they're really outgoing people. So it reminds me a little bit also back in Spain, you know, people really chatty and I'm really chatty. So really happy for that, of course.
Yes.
And the landscapes are amazing.
Oh, good. Excellent. Right. Well, will we have a Pint of Science then?
Yeah.
Okay. Tell me about the initiative. Tell me a little bit about what Pint of Science is all about and what the outcome that you're hoping for with it.
It's my first year being involved in Pint of Science. And I have to say that I just discovered about Pint of Science last August, actually. It was also by a chance because, well, I was just planning to be involved in different activities outside my PhD. I really like organizing events and I like to meet new people. I love science, to communicate science as well. So, well, I end up because of an advice from my brother, actually, in Pint of Science. Pint of Science is a non-profit organization, and it was born in 2013 in UK. And the main idea is to try to bridge the gap in between science in the academia, or well, science in general, and the general public in a relaxing way, you know, because, well, workshops can be organized and conferences, but it's not the same like being in a pub. It's everything more relaxed, more friendly. You have the chance to talk face to face to the researcher, to ask your questions. So the main idea behind Pint of Science is to bridge the gap in between science and the general public.
And what type of conversations were had?
We had a really broad topics, actually, because Pint of Science is organized internationally, I think around 300 cities at the moment.
Right.
and it happens at the same time everywhere. And there are always specific themes that have to be organized. And this year we have 6 different topics: biology, environmental topics, physics, and neurology. For example, we had from social studies. For one of the talks in social studies was about the referendum. We also had a really interesting talk, actually, about the behavior of farmers. They influence really in their farm, in their daily life. And well, okay. Farming is a really hot topic in Ireland because, well, sometimes it's you can find cows everywhere and farms indeed. Everywhere as well. We have some speakers talking also about astronomy, astrology, also about mental health, antimicrobial resistance. So we had a really broad topics that they were covered in 9 different events during the festival.
And what did you yourself speak about?
No, I didn't speak, actually. My role in Pint of Science this year has been, I'm the local coordinator, one of the local coordinators. So together with Benjamin, we were coordinating a group of 15 volunteers. Maybe for next year, I'll be talking, actually.
And how does it work? The researchers just arrive in the pub, and do they have audiovisual presentations? Do they just stand up and start talking, or do they talk one-to-one with people and move around?
The way this festival is organized, there is a national team. So there is Pint of Science Ireland, and it has been organized in Dublin, Galway, Limerick, and in Cork.
Yeah.
There is an application form where people interested in talking about science, they apply it. So then they are contacted and they give a presentation in the pub. So normally the pubs are kind of for a small audience. I think the maximum it has been 50 attendees, I think.
Right, okay.
So yeah, it's in a really small, relaxing area, but they have a presentation. So they give a presentation. We have also, actually, I'm thinking now, we had yesterday one of the speakers, she didn't use any presentation, for example, and she read a poem. She was talking about mental health and was really cool. Yes, something different within the festival, really.
And did the audience engage? Do they ask questions? Do they offer suggestions? Are they good?
Yeah, yeah. Actually, in all the events, we always had someone from the public and the audience asking questions. Yeah, they got really engaged. Actually, most of the people were leaving the events asking us for next year. And it was
excellent.
Like, great, yeah, great. We will be doing it. No worries.
All right. Well, listen, Bea, it was lovely chatting to you. I know that you have a website, pintofscience.ie. So if anybody wants to have a look at the information that's there, it's pintofscience.ie, just in case you're interested in that. And listen, I wish you well for next year's event as well, and wish you well
in your
studies in Cork, and say hello to all the Cork cousins for us, won't you?
I will.
Right.
Thank you so much.
It was a pleasure to
have this interview.
Thanks, Beatrice. We'll talk to you again.
Okay, bye.
Live on ERA, presented by Ger Sweeney.
And with that, I'm going to say goodbye to you. Almost time to say goodbye anyway. Can I say thank you to everybody who took part in the programme, B, that you've just been listening to. Thank you to Peter O'Dwyer from the Times Ireland edition. Thank you very much indeed to Juan, who was talking to us about his trip back to UL in Limerick. And most especially, thank you for listening. Now, there's still a few things I didn't get to this week, but I'll get to them next week on the programme. Time runs out very quickly. If you would like to get in touch, I would love to hear from you, as always, GER at talkradioeurope.com. Let me know if there's something you think we should be featuring here on the Irish programme, Live on ERA. Now, can I just remind you before I go that Costa Gaels are having an end of season barbecue. It's happening on Saturday, the 9th of June. You're all welcome. It's happening at Marbella Rugby Club, and it kicks off at about 11 o'clock. There will be exhibition matches. There'll be presentations of medals and cups and all sorts of good things, entertainment, food, and a lot of good fun for all the family. You don't have to be Irish. You don't have to be involved in the GAA. If you'd like to come along and have a good old day, I'll be there on the day. We'll have the microphone. We'll have a bit of fun as well. If you want more information, contact Justin Parks or check out their Facebook page, Costa Gaels, or their website, costagaels.com. And Costa Gaels is spelled CostaGaels. Can I say thank you to Ken Shaw in Gran Canaria. Ken sent me a lovely message last week after the programme. Thank you, Ken. And he said, Ger, I'm not Irish, but I'm enjoying the programme. You don't have to be Irish to enjoy Live on ERA. Thank you very much for tuning in, and do keep in touch with us on the programme. I'm going to finish with this track. It's a beautiful track from Gary O'Mara. He makes this banjo sing so beautifully. Enjoy the week, look after yourselves, and keep it right here on TRE Talk Radio Europe, your voice in Spain. I'll see you next Monday.
school day built around your child's needs and interests. It's possible with K-12. K-12-powered schools are accredited, tuition-free, online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. Students learn from state-certified teachers trained to teach online. And with the flexibility to learn wherever there's internet, it can fit into any family schedule. Join the more than 3 million families who've chosen K-12. You can make the switch at any time. Go to k12.com/podcast today to learn more.